Miss Nesbit, reel 4.
But I had a great love of poetry, and we had a lot of loves in common. We both had fun. John Donne, practically our favourite poet, and most of the Elizabethans. And then he introduced me to Delamere and Wilfred Gibson.
What did you think of Yeats? You actually had met Yeats, hadn't you?
Yes,
you
yes,
I Abbey
had.
Players. What did Brooke think of Yeats?
He wasn't as great an admirer of Yeats as a good many people were at the time. And I remember him saying once, I do read Yeats because I know, I'm told by my betters that he's a great poet, but it doesn't give me real pleasure to read him. It's the same as he felt as I did about Shelley and Keats. I read Keats with the greatest of pleasure still. I have to get up and read. But Shelley, I never found, gave me the same kind of thrill.
And did you agree with Rupert Brooke about Yeats?
Yes. I was enormously impressed by him and his poems, which I knew a good many by heart when I was with the Irish Players, you know. But oddly enough, I didn't find myself going to pick up a volume of Yeats. If I wanted something to read at night, I'd much rather pick up a volume of Delamere. And I don't know whether he was a greater poet than Delamere. I think my betters, as Rupert would say, probably think he is, but it's just a personal choice.
Did Rupert Brooke know any of what we might call modern poets like Ezra Pound?
No. I didn't realise Ezra Pound was contemporary with him. I suppose he was.
Yes, he was. Writing at that time, though I shouldn't think they would have known the same people.
No.
And I suppose he would not have known T.S. Eliot. I don't think
he came to England until after the war.
When you met Rupert Brooke, he'd just had practically a nervous breakdown, I think. Did that make him a sort of solemn, depressed person?
No, not at all. One wouldn't have known it until one knew him well, you know. He always seemed to have a tremendous fund of gaiety.
How often were you able to see him with your acting commitments and his commitments?
Not all that much before he went away, because I was acting continuously all the time, but we'd see each other in the afternoons a great deal. And we used to go to Eddie Marsh's flat and have tea together there and then go to the theatre. And then another friend, Alfred Rutherstone, had a flat in Thurlow Square here, and I remember I spent a lot of time there with him. And then when he came back from America, though, there was a time before I went, when I was playing Deirdre, I saw a lot of him then. And then I went on this tour just about the time that he was joined the Hood Battalion, and so he used to come and see me at various towns.
Did you and he ever talk about the war? Did you and he ever talk about the First World War, about why he wanted to go?
Yes, he was eager to a degree. He used to keep writing, saying, I can't find anything to do yet. I haven't just still been accepted anywhere. He wanted to join. Then Eddie Marsh got him into the Winston's little lot, the Royal Hood Battalion. And he was absolutely thrilled with that. And sometimes his letters from where they were in training, he would tell me, a secret, don't dare to breathe it for anybody, but we're Winston's boys and we're going to be the scene of action any minute now. They went off to Antwerp quite suddenly, sort of overnight.
Was he able to continue to write to you as frequently as before when he was ill?
Yes, nearly as frequently. And on the voyage out to Scaros, he wrote to me just the beginning of his illness. He said he'd had a terrible go of dysentery. It was just like something that arrowroot was being poured through. And he said he felt very ill, but he'd be, thank God, he'd be better in time for the thing. But then it turned out to be food poisoning, and he died. I was horrified to see a picture somewhere the other day of a ghastly sort of mausoleum they've erected on Scaros over his grave. And there was just a touching little cross, which I know Dennis Brown sent me a snapshot, a picture of it. And now apparently some society calling themselves the Friends of Rupert Brooke or something, I've got a hideous little memorial.
Oh dear.
Like something in a Victorian graveyard.
How did you receive the news of his death?
By telephone from Eddie Marsh. I was lying in bed in the morning and he telephoned me. He said, I don't want you to see it because it'll be in the paper today. And I hadn't heard from him since the letter saying he was feeling so ill, you know, so I thought possibly they'd gone into action.
Did you still have to carry on in a play that very day?
I wasn't playing at the moment. The play had finished. And then I just started with what war work I could find, and then I somehow felt I must do something else. It didn't seem to take my mind off anything. And then some other friends had died that I was very fond of. And so I got this offer to go to America, and so I
did it. Please you or depress you to see what a fuss people made about Rupert Brooke? His obituary in the Times by Winston Churchill.
Oh yes, I was rather thrilled by it. I was, because I remember getting a letter from him. He was so thrilled and amused. He said, I really shall be famous someday, I think, because the Dean of St. Paul's has quoted one of the sonnets. And that, he thought that was very funny. He was very amused about that.
Was he self-conscious, in a way, about his public image?
Yes, he was, rather. And he used to sort of laugh at himself because he blushed very easily, very clear, sweet skin. And I know he'd been in, wrote to me from Canada, it started off, oh God, oh Montreal. And then he said that some people had been, said a lot of, I had to go and speak. He'd been writing the paper there, I had to go and speak at a meeting of females. And they all surrounded me, and he said, I played the blushing young poet to perfection. And he was very funny about photographs of somebody called Cheryl Shell, I think it was an American, reading about it. And he said, oh, I think they're really too revolting, but I'm sure they're the kind of things that ladies would like to see on the front of a book of poems. God forbid I should write poems to match that face.
From the pictures I've seen of him, he was particularly good-looking.
Yeah.
Did you have a favourite picture of him?
Did I have?
A favourite picture of him.
Yes. Very much. I didn't like the ones that were printed with the book at all. But I have one that I like very much. He's just simply himself.
Were the very romantic photographs of him, in a way, posed or self-conscious?
I don't think he wasn't self-conscious, and I don't think he was ever conscious of his looks. I mean, I suppose he must have been told so often that he was good-looking, but it never occurred to him that he was particularly good-looking. And I remember going with him to a garden party in Downing Street, and he'd just after he'd come back from America, and he'd tanned a beautiful honey colour, you see, and his hair was gold with the sun. He was wearing a blue shirt. He always very fond of wearing blue shirts, which nobody did in those days. And Roger Fry and he and I were lunching together, going to the party, and Roger was properly dressed for a garden party. And Rupert was rather horrified. He said, "I can't go in these clothes, can I?" And we all said, "Yes, of course you can." And everybody did rather gaze at him because he did look so beautiful. And he began to think that it was because of he wasn't wearing the right clothes. I don't think it ever occurred to him that it was because of his good looks. And he left in a hurry, went off to Victoria Station.
Did your parents ever meet him?
My mother met him. My father was away at the time. But she, I don't think, had any idea, because she was quite startled when Eddie telephoned me that morning. It was because, I don't know, I think one's first real love affair, one's very secret about. One doesn't talk about it to anyone.
So she didn't know how much
he'd meant to know how much, no, not it wasn't until after his death, really, that...
What about Rupert Brooke's mother? I've heard that she was rather fierce, formidable.
Oh, she... I got to know her very well and to like her very much. She was very rather... frightening old lady. I gather to a great many people she and Eddie Marsh disliked each other very much. I think she didn't approve of Eddie, and she thought that he was introducing Rupert into the wrong kind of world, the Bloomsbury set and the social set and so forth. But I was very pleased. Geoffrey Keynes wrote to me, and he read my book, and he said, "I'm so glad you've given a human portrait of Mrs. Brooke, because..." She wasn't nearly such a frightening person as people thought, but she was very reserved. She was very like Rupert in lots of ways. She was very highly strung, but kept it under very much.
She, yes. In fact, I think, was godmother to
yes.
Her first child,
yes.
Wasn't she?
Yes. And she was very fond of Mark, my little boy. I used to go and stay with her. With him, and poor woman, she had three sons. One son, the eldest son, died of pleurisy just about 2 years before the war started, and then both Alfred and Rupert were killed.
It must have been sad for her. Everybody would go on and on about Rupert,
yes,
whereas Alfred would be ignored.
Exactly. And she always... It's very funny, I had a letter. It had a lot of letters from people I don't know writing about the book to me, who badly enjoyed it. And this man wrote and said, "You won't remember, I was a little boy of 14, but I can remember being taken by my mother to visit Mrs. Brooke at Rugby, and you were there staying, and I was very excited because someone said you were an actress, and I'd never seen an actress in the flesh. But," he said, "I distinctly remember my mother going to..." She had photographs, blown up photographs of the two boys on an easel, two easels in her drawing room, and said, "Oh, this is your famous son." And Mrs. Brooke at once said, "And this is my son also. He too gave his life for his country."